Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I am so glad you came back to join the show. I had a wonderful week this week. We went to South Carolina, Fort Jackson, to be exact, a 52,000-acre compound for Army training. Our 18-year-old grandson, Joshua Wayne, he is still in high school, and he came back with us yesterday to finish his senior year, and then he will go into the reserves, and he will obtain his college education. He'd like to be a psychologist. For those of you who are listening out there who know Joshua and who've known him all of his life, friends and family for many years, he didn't talk when he was a little boy. I want to say that he was almost 3 years old before he really started verbalizing. He would point and grunt at many things, and of course surrounded by an older brother and older cousins and grandparents and all kinds of doters, if you will. We would play the game with him and guess what it was he wanted. Now, it was a 10-hour trip from South Carolina home, and except for a few respites, he talked nonstop. And we got filled in on everything from food to training to his M16 to his marching to his physical training. He was happy to be leaving, but I think he really, really understood what took place. The celebration was awesome. Family Day, we all gathered at this big field at Fort Jackson, and we're sitting on the bleachers. There's thousands of people. We're sitting on the bleachers, and I'm looking across the field, and there's like woods across the field. And I said to my husband and to my son, Spike, I bet the kids are hiding in those bushes. And they looked at me and said, why would they do that? I said, I don't know. I don't see them anyplace else on the field. I don't see them way over there under the canopies. I mean, there's a lot of kids doing this. Sure enough, after I said that, we could see some movement over there. And there was a lady sitting on the other side of my husband, and she said, yeah, we've been to these before. They are hiding in the bushes. So, you know, we did the Pledge of Allegiance and all those kind of things, and the Reverend gave a talk, and then they announced the newest soldiers in the United States Army, and they set off smoke bombs in all different colors and ran through them, and let me tell you, I'm pretty sure there wasn't a dry eye on the bleachers, not one. Even great big strong men were caught up in all of that emotion. And then they ran across the field and got into formation, which was astounding in itself. If you've ever been in an elementary school and watched a teacher trying to keep the kindergartners in line, you would really appreciate how quickly they got into formation. So it was great. Really, really great. We got to spend the whole day with Josh. There were places, the Fort Jackson is a town in itself. There was a shopping center, a bowling alley, two bowling alleys, a movie theater, parks. There's even a water park. So, and we got to meet some of Josh's friends. It was really, really, I guess the best word to use is inspiring. Because of all the things that we talk about on the show, all the things that we know that are going wrong out there, and all the things that we struggle with in our own personal life, it seems nice to know that there's something out there that's really pulling us together and pointing us in the right direction. Mind you, I am not a warmonger. Probably never will be. I've always felt that there are other ways to settle things besides fighting. However, it's very prideful to look out there and see all those kids stand there in 95 degree weather and not flinch, not snicker, not wipe a mosquito off of their face. It's inspiring. So it was really, really special, and I'm so glad that we got to share it with our Joshua. So I'm going to bring Shell in because I'm hoping she's got some more information about Michael Brown. I tried to find a few things this morning and really didn't find much except an audio. Good morning, Shell. Are you there, Shell?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can now, yeah.
Okay, all right, good, good, good.
How are you?
Doing good, doing real good. You know, busy few days, and, you know, got a lot of accomplished, and it's nice to be back on the show, and I'm glad you're back. I saw your Facebook post, you know, very proud family there with Joshie, so that was very heartwarming. I like seeing that.
It was, like I said, I mean, you see some of these young people, and it can't be easy for all of them, honey, you know, because some of them are you know, they might be 18, but they're little tiny guys or girls. And I want to say that I was incredibly proud of something else. There were A, B, C, D, E, and F troops. And at least four of them, the recognized soldier that beat the physical training exams were girls.
Wow.
Yeah. Points to pass were 300. And there were three or four girls who did like 355, 359 for points for physical training. So I thought that was awesome.
That is awesome.
It speaks volumes about, you know, yeah, because you always hear talk, I don't want to follow a woman into a war zone. They're too emotional, and I don't want to do this. And I they've never been behind a mother if they feel that way, not a real mother.
Yeah.
Because I dare say that most of the people who know me would walk behind me.
Yeah.
So,
anything else, in each gender, in both men and women, There are women who are very aggressive and sharp and quick thinking, and there are men who are very timid and shy and nervous, and to take a particular quality, there are feminine and masculine qualities, but both men and women have both, and it's what are the personality traits that are more. Are more obvious in that particular person. But there are women who make great leaders, and there are men who make great leaders. It has nothing to do with the gender. It has to do with their particular personality makeup. And when people stop putting it to gender or race or religion, that's when you start having the best person for the job get the job. When you start, you know, being colorblind and genderblind and religionblind and things like that, and you just look at the qualifications of the person, you know. Men are generally stronger than women and blah, 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 and all that. Yet I've seen women, I mean, I'm not even 5'2", and sometimes I can lift things that are heavier than guys that are a foot taller than me, and it shocks me because they won't even attempt to, I'm not going to try to lift it, and I go over and I pick it up, and it's like nothing for me. So it's always surprised me throughout my life that I've seen men that are tower me that are very... that they won't exert themselves physically, and I always go overboard the other way. That's why I get injured so much. you know.
But it's, you've always surprised me because you know, for those of you who have never met Shelley, she is little. I mean, she would be considered a small statured woman, but incredibly rugged. I've seen her lift things. 3 boxes at one time. I've seen her lift tires out of the back of cars. I've seen her do a lot of things like that. I've seen her help after hurricane cleanup with moving logs and all that right alongside all the guys. So that's true. And I would agree with that. I think physically speaking, we have the ability to push our limits or to limit our limits, for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe something that happens to people, in fairness and for the other side of the story, if you will, I think sometimes people do something at a very young age and hurt themselves, you know, lift something the wrong way or turn around to pick up something and hurt themselves, and that stays with them.
Yeah.
And after that, there's a, you know, there's kind of a fear that they can't get rid of. You know, it's like nearly drowning or having a dog bite you or all those little things that can happen to us when we're really small and can't really process what's happened to us that changes the way we live the rest of our life, which is really too bad, you know,
right.
Really.
But it's seeing these women who graduated now because it's like it's showing that you really can be gender blind even when you're talking about the armed forces, you know, for this country, that women can be just as capable, just like women are becoming firemen now. But what I agree with is that you don't lower the standard to allow women in, because the bottom line is that job requires somebody who can lift that huge hose, like a fireman, for instance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't lower mm-hmm. the standards to allow women to get in, but if you have a woman that meets the physical demands, then she has every right to be out there. And if she has the physical stamina and the drive to be able to meet those, you know, to go through all the tests and pass, whether it be as a fireman, a firefighter, police officer, somebody in the armed forces, then that woman is actually going to be an asset out there, because, you know, women are just as sharp, just as quick. When you get those type of aggressive women, they're just as aggressive as aggressive men. And it's nice to see that there's starting to be more of a mixture out there of both genders in some of these very, very aggressive, physically demanding fields.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I agree with that. And, of course, we've talked about this a million times, keeping your mind closed. Doesn't let you know, learn, or experience many, many things. Foolishness mm-hmm. to keep your mind closed
yeah.
because of one incident. It's just, it's silly. And if there's
mm-hmm.
something like that that's stopping you from reevaluating something or re-experiencing something for a different outcome, that's silly. Life is too short to do that. You'll end up with nothing that you dare do, you know?
That's right.
Because
right.
something can happen with everything. So were you able to find out anything more about Michael Brown?
Well, frustratingly, no. I mean, I found out a lot of innuendo and conjecture, but nothing was confirmed. I must have gone through a dozen different sites. You know, I went into CNN, ABC, NBC News. I tried not to bring up some of the more obscure ones that had, like, weird names on them. I didn't even bother bringing them up. And I kept typing in different questions, you know, because of this claim. I told you that I had read that article that that Darren Wilson, who's the police officer, was almost beaten unconscious by Michael Brown. And I had read that, like, within a couple of days of it happening, and then I didn't hear anything more about it. So I was typing, you know, was Officer Darren Wilson injured by Michael Brown? And then I got all these hits on it, but none of them actually answer the question. All they keep saying is that the police department is saying that Officer Darren Wilson was taken to the hospital right after the incident because the side of his face was swollen. They said x-rays were taken. Now, one report said that his eye socket was fractured. Another report said that the x-rays showed that there was no fracture, that it was just, you know, just bruising, that it was just the side of his face was just swollen and bruised. Now, I know that you can get punched hard enough in the face to daze you without leaving a bruise. because I had gotten in a scuffle years ago. I was hit twice in the face and thought I was going to pass out from the second strike. It really just made my entire head ring. And but I didn't lose consciousness, but the next day I didn't even have a mark on me. So I know that you can get hit really, really hard, hard enough to cause disorientation and not even have a mark from it. Now, mine wasn't in my eye socket. Mine was in my lower jaw, and that's a very sensitive area. But you can actually knock somebody out by dislocating their jaw. My jaw wasn't dislocated, but it, when I got hit there, it sent a shock wave, actually, and it disoriented me for a good minute, I would say. So anyway, so I'm listening to this. There also is some sort of a recording now that's with the eye for verification, because evidently somebody was standing out on the street and video chatting with somebody, and they caught the shooting in the background. And you hear rapid-fire shots, and then you hear a three-second delay, and then you hear more rapid-fire shots. They're saying that if they do confirm this, that it almost confirms what the cop said, because he said that Michael Brown was charging him, and he was shooting him to stop him. And then there was a moment where he thought Michael was getting off him, and then he came at him again, and he shot him the other times. They said six of the shots, I think there were 10 shots fired altogether, six of them actually hit Michael Brown. And the other thing is that there were claims that he was shot in the back, that he had his back to them, but they said the autopsy confirmed that all shots were frontal. All shots were for the front of him. He was never shot in the back. So this was a big thing. This is one of the things that caused the riot, because they said that he was running, you know, that he had his back to him and was trying to, like, putting his hands up, and then he got shot anyway. But the autopsy said all six shots that landed on the body were in the front of the body. He was never shot in the back. So it's difficult right now. What I don't understand, and this is where my frustration comes with the media and the police department both, if there is evidence that Darren Wilson was injured, why hasn't it been confirmed? What are we talking, 3 weeks later now, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Why hasn't a statement been issued to say, look, Darren Wilson was beaten badly by Michael Brown. He had to be hospitalized. He was dazed and was in fear of being beaten unconscious and his weapon being stolen. So he shot to prevent that and unfortunately killed him. You know, how come that statement hasn't been made? They keep alluding to this supposed beating, but it either it happened or it didn't happen. So why do people keep alluding to it? How come nobody's confirmed it yet? You know, they won't release the medical records yet. They won't, you know, so that's what's confusing to me. What's the big secrecy? Either it happened or it didn't happen. If it happened, wouldn't it calm people down? All right? He was,
well, and I would have to wonder everything that you're saying for me. If I didn't know anything about it and this was the first time I was hearing about it, I would be – it's incredulous, to be honest with you, considering what happened in the aftermath, that somebody wasn't immediately put front and center on the boob tube and said, look, everybody calm down. It's not a black and white issue. There's a lot more involved. You have to let us find out what it is and do something about it. If that had been said early on instead of all the innuendo, I mean, the first report I heard was the kid standing there with his arms up in the air and the cop just shot him six times. That was the first report I heard. Boom,
exactly.
Boom, 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 boom. And one of the doctors said, I don't know why I needed to shoot him five more times. The first bullet went into his brain. So, and then I also heard that
yeah, the autopsy
that he was
actually
bent.
Yeah.
Right? He was bent like he was trying to come into the cop car. And that's how
right.
He got him in the top of the head. So who
right.
knows?
Well, the autopsy actually said that the fatal wound was not the first shot. So to make a comment like, well, you have to shoot him that many times for the first one killed him is not even true, because the shot to the head was not the first shot. You know, when they look at wound patterns, they can, by what the body does, they can tell the order that shots came in. And according to the autopsy, not only were they all frontal shots, but the shot to the head was not the first shot. And
honey, I can't. Your call is breaking up. I don't know. Are you on your house phone, right? Did you walk into another room?
No, no. It shouldn't make any difference anyway. Can you hear me?
No, I can't hear you at all, Shell.
All right, I'm gonna call back in.
Maybe. Okay. All right. Call me right back.
I'm gonna call back in.
So the. Okay, I'm back. I don't know what happened, but first Shelly couldn't get back in. And are you here now, honey?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can. I don't know.
You can hear me now?
I'm talking. Yeah, I'm talking away, and then my phone went to dial tone. So apparently something to do with the lines out here. A lot of the phone lines are underground out here in Lake Worth.
Uh-huh.
And they had to run a whole new line for me, and I don't know that it helped, but, you know, for all last week when I was trying to reset up the show and change the time to 8 o'clock and all of those good things, it wouldn't let me do it. And every time I'd do all the work to fill out all the paperwork and I'd click on, you know, create the episode, it would go to another page and I would get an error reading. So AT&T was here 3 or 4 times. They were here on the weekend, last weekend, and then he sent somebody while we were gone to work out in the lawn. So everything went through this morning and let me schedule all the episodes to come, and it will be Monday through Friday at 8 o'clock. They wouldn't let me do 3 days. They'd let me do 1 day, but for some reason the scheduling wouldn't allow me to do Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So I finally got it to go through this morning, so I thought everything was all right. But if there's still a phone issue, then it's possible that it's still not exactly right. Connectivity is a very tricky thing, you know.
Yep, yep.
If you, it's just like our bodies, like we talk about.
If it's my home phone and I call you back, because that's why I always have my cell here also. If I call you back on my cell phone, then it's the home phone. All of a sudden I hear the show. If I don't hear you on either, then I know it's an issue with the show itself, because it's two
mm-hmm.
different services, two different carrier, you know, that whole thing. So
right.
Yeah. So when
well,
I couldn't hear
I'm,
you on the phone, also I was like, oh, okay. So there's a problem here.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's all right now. I think it seems to have straightened itself out, and everything is coming across. So anyway, I looked. Like I told everybody in the very beginning, I looked into this at some length this morning. I got up pretty early, and we didn't get home last night until, I don't know, 9:30.
Wow.
9 or 9:30, something like that. Yeah, it's a long ride, and I'm going to have to do a show on truckers, because I remember as a young child that trucking was a very respectable group of people. They, you know, they watched out for other people on the road. They were, you know, often truckers would let you know if there was something going on up ahead, or if there was an issue. Or I've known of truckers who have stopped and helped people who are having a problem on the side of the road and all this stuff. Not anymore. There are sections in northern Florida where I-95 is two lanes, two very small lanes. And at several different times during the course of the drive home yesterday, I was surrounded by as many as 15 18-wheelers on these small little roads.
Yep.
And one trucker, I wasn't the only one he was bullying. He was bullying everybody on the road, but you've chosen the wrong person if you start bullying me, because I very sadly, for my own benefit, I don't seem to have a lot of fear if somebody pushes me. And Spike and Chrissy and Josh are all saying, just let him go, Grandma. And I said, who does he think he is? I mean, you know, we're all going 80 miles an hour. And there's no place for him to go. And he's pulling up in this huge cab. and a full 18-wheel truck, and he's like intimidating me, revving up his engine. At one time, he even blew his air horn thing. And there's traffic everywhere. We're going fast, but we're no more than a car length away from each other. I mean, it was an accident looking to happen.
Right.
And he intimidated so many other people that they all just got out of his way. And Spike says to me, now you're bullying him. I said, okay. So when he said that to me, I backed off, and I thought to myself, yeah, he's right. I'm carrying it too far,
and somebody could get hurt. Just so you know, since we're talking about it on the air, if you have a trucker doing that, you should call 911 and report it to the the state troopers, because what happens is when you have a truck driver who's driving that aggressively, there's one of two things happening. He's either on some sort of speed to stay awake, because sometimes they drive extended hours even though it's illegal for them to do so. The Department of Transportation, the DOT, has very strict regulations as to how long a truck driver is permitted to drive, because there's been so many fatal accidents where truck drivers would push themselves, you know, because a lot of truck drivers that do deliveries from state to state only make money when they make the drop. So what they do is they try to get extra drops in, because they'll get a certain amount of commission on each drop. So they'll go from Florida to North Carolina, make a drop, then they'll pick up something in North Carolina and take it out to California, and so they're all over the country. My ex-husband used to do that. And so what they do is they try to get extra pickups and drops, and they just keep going from state to state. But what happens is you get tired. So they either take something to make themselves artificially stay awake, or they just drink so much coffee that they're wired and they're trying to make time. So if you get someone driving that aggressively, They're driving recklessly. They're trying to make time. They're trying to get to a deadline or something, and they are literally putting other people on the road at risk. So you should absolutely call 911 when you have a trucker that's being that aggressive. He needs to be pulled over. His load needs to be looked at, and his log needs to be looked at to make sure that he's not overextending himself. Because if he's driving that recklessly, there's a good chance that he has those things happening, you know. Most truck drivers, because when I worked at the moving company, you know, we used to have to get their logbooks. Most drivers, I have to say, do honor the DOT regulations, because otherwise they're going to lose their trucker license and their livelihood. But even though that they know that can happen, some of them stretch it because they're just trying to make extra money. Just like every other field, there are people that don't pay attention to the rules and regulations of the industry they decided to go into, and those are the ones that cause the fatal accidents. Those are the ones that cause these major pileups. So I'm glad you mentioned it on the show, and I feel very strongly about that, that these truck drivers need to be reported to law enforcement when they're doing that, because that is a huge truck. To have one car hit another car is bad enough, but that an accident with a truck like that can take out a dozen cars. And for me, it's unforgivable when they become that aggressive on the road, because they can do so much more damage than just two cars getting in an accident.
Well, I got to tell you, I have done that before, honey. I have called 911 and reported not just truckers, but other drivers that are being aggressive, or, you know, do you remember, I don't even know if it's still, if it really became a law, a rule, whatever, etiquette, I don't know what you call it, when they said that if you are in the inside lane and somebody comes up behind you and you're not going as fast as they are, they blink their lights at you and you're supposed to move. You know anything about that?
Not on the inside lane, on the outside lane. If you're in the fast lane, there's a fast lane and a slow lane. The left, the far left is the fast lane. If you're in the far left lane, even if you're doing the speed limit or even above, and somebody comes up behind you and flashes their lights, that's a way of saying, please let me get past you. So when somebody does that to me, I move over.
Even if you're going 80 miles an hour?
Yep, because I'm not gonna try to make somebody do the speed limit. If they want to speed more than me, I'm gonna move over. The only time I don't move over is if they tailgate me or they get obnoxious before they do that, which is probably, you know, two wrongs don't make a right type of thing. But I don't like being tailgated. I don't like somebody coming right up on me and then all of a sudden flashing their bright. That ticks me off. So, and that's not right because it shouldn't. I shouldn't care. But I don't like that kind of aggressive driving. But what happens is if you get a person, you know, thinking about it logically, if you get a person that rides up on you like that and then you prevent them from passing you, you are actually co-creating an accident because when they do finally get around you, they're going to be so angry that they're going to be driving even more recklessly. So I've kind of altered my bantering with that kind of thing. If I get somebody that wants to get in front of me, I just let them in front of me. I don't care anymore. I'm not going to live other people's karma for them, so to speak. All right? They want to speed. There could be a cop up ahead. Let the cop take care of it. I'm not law enforcement. You know, and what happens is if you try to make somebody else do the speed limit or not pass you, and then you're actually creating a more hazardous situation because then they get tense, they get angry, and they're going to try to speed around you anyway. And then they start even driving more. You know, this is where road rage comes into it. And road rage makes people act out of character, makes them act in a way that is very, very volatile and can actually be fatal in some. I mean, there have been many fatalities linked to road rage because people just, they lose their common sense when that kicks in.
Right.
So I've altered the way I used to be with regard to that because road rage wasn't really an issue when I was younger. It was just starting. It was like so few and far between. Now road rage is a very common occurrence on the road, which is sort of a commentary on people in general, that people are becoming more impatient with everything, whether they're driving, with coworkers, with their kids, you know, just in general. It's kind of like a tone where we need to make a shift and start taking time to realize that everybody's time is just as important as ours, whether you're on the road, whether you're in a conversation, whether you're trying to do a job, you know, what other people are doing also has importance, also has a necessity behind it. And people have to start being a little bit more reasonable that, yeah, you have to get somewhere, but you know what, everybody else on the road around you has to get where they're going also, and maybe they're late also, and maybe they have a family emergency also. So people have to stop thinking that what they're going through is more important than what everybody else around them is going through. And that's what leads to this kind of stuff.
Well, let me tell you something. If you could get half of the world to get your last statement, things would be a million times nicer. A million. Because people don't seem to be able to do that, Shell. People don't seem to be able to think to themselves, okay, I walked in here today. I'm in not a great mood. I'm feeling a little bit mean, a little bit sad. I'm not going to be so easy to deal with, and I know that. And I walk up to you, and I see that ever-famous look on Shelley's face, and because we're friends, I see that she's in a worse place than I am.
Yeah.
And I'm able to, but that's because I know her. I love her.
Mm-hmm.
She's my friend.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we can get that about each other. The trick is to be alert enough to see that in somebody that you don't know.
Right.
And most people don't want to give up the self-centeredness of wallowing in your own crap.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be the only one in the room that's in a bad place so that everybody else caters to them.
Right.
But you could get to what you just said. If we could come up with a beautiful T-shirt that said, you know, it's possible that you're in a worse mood than I am, so I'm going to step aside. Maybe that's what the T-shirt should say.
Yeah.
And and allow us to have that understanding, the world
mm-hmm.
would be so much better. But I don't
mm-hmm.
know if you're ever going to, because we're all pretty self-centered. But of course, you're right. And I will say that if I'm going 80 miles an hour and I'm on the turnpike, I do a lot of driving on the turnpike. I seldom go under 80. Hope there's no cops out there listening who are going to start looking for my vehicle. And if a truck going like a bat comes up behind me and blinks his lights, yes, I move. Because I see that he's on a docket, on a something, and he's got to be someplace, and I realize that that costs truckers money. And you're right. It's none of my business whether he's doing something right or something wrong. That's also a hard pill for somebody like me to swallow, but
mm-hmm.
I'm getting. So I'll move. What I didn't like about yesterday was there was no place for anybody to go.
Right. I see, that's what I think is ridiculous. When you have cars or trucks tailgating people, and then you look in front of you, and it's just a sea of cars. It's like, where in the hell do they think they're going?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where are they going to be able to go? It's ridiculous. So, yeah, in a situation like that, when I don't see a clear place in front for the person to go, I'm not going to let them get in front of me just to bog down traffic more. So that's the only time I don't move over, and I don't understand the people that start flashing their lights in a situation like that. They're just not paying attention, you know. But you know, but yeah, no, it is an issue today, more so than ever before in history. With our hustle bustle lives, with everything, you know, everybody trying to cram more in a day, you know, there's just like a lack of respect. And like you said a minute ago, you know, everybody thinks what they're going through is bigger, badder, takes precedence over what's happening to everybody else. And just because I don't wear my heart on my sleeve and walk around in a bad mood because something happened to me doesn't mean nothing happened to me. It just means I deal with it better than you, you know. I remember once when I was working, I think it was at TCT, and somebody there was just, I mean, being foul to everybody, just foul. I was shocked, you know. And they said, well, so-and-so just had this happen to them or whatever. I said, oh, really? Because I said, I had the same thing happen to me a few years ago. And I said, and I didn't walk around abusing my coworkers all day. I said, I kept it to myself. I said, that's part of being a responsible adult. I said, that doesn't cut this individual any slack with me whatsoever. I said, they're just being abusive and they need to grow up. I was pissed because they were treating the rest of the staff, I mean, just horribly. And everybody else was afraid and cowering and, you know, me and my big mouth. I came back at them because it was incredulous to me that they would be talking to people like that. And they did finally calm down. But it's like everybody was cowering because, oh, you know, they had this happen. It's like, so? How do they know that didn't happen to me? The only difference is I don't walk around taking it out on innocent bystanders, you know? And this is what people don't understand. If you have something bad happen to you and it affected you, and then you take it out on everyone around you, you have now become an abuser. You know, just because something bad happened to you doesn't give you a license to act lousy to people. You know, you're an adult now. You're not 8 years old anymore acting out. And this is one of the things, this is an issue with adults today. So many of them are immature, and they don't know how to buck it up and act like an adult. You know what? Crappy things happen to people. Crappy things happen to children. Crappy things happen to adults. It's how you deal with it. The type of integrity and the type of dignity that you maintain yourself in when something bad happens to you. You know, do you fall apart? Do you get angry? Do you take it out on innocent bystanders? Or do you pick yourself up and say, wow, this lousy thing just happened to me. How can I make this better? And when you have that attitude, guess what? Your life does get better. And everybody around you will rally to help you because you're not being abusive to them.
Well, those, as far as I'm concerned, are more words of wisdom, for sure, but It's a hard trait to share. It's a hard value to give to others. They have to find it themselves. I mean, I know a lot of that I love dearly. And they're pretty, I mean, when they're pregnant, they're the only ones that had a terrible pregnancy.
Yeah.
They have the first flu that was ever, you know, ever had by anyone. Everything that happens to them, they do not have the ability to look into the life of someone else and say, oh my God, I don't know how he or she is dealing with this, you know. Instead, mm-hmm. you know, it's, well, she thinks she's got it bad. I did that and it was much worse. I mean, you know, how many people do you know like that? Hundreds? Thousands?
Yeah.
And
yep.
It is a beautiful thing when you realize about yourself, when you can look at somebody and say, wow, I don't know how you're handling this so well. I mean, that's a very nice thing to say to somebody, and it also opens up the door for them to also feel that way about you. Just like every nice thing that you do, not always, because some people just can't get there, but mm-hmm. to most, if you open up that door, it opens a door of understanding and congeniality. We look at each other and say, oh, isn't that nice that she realizes that, you know, my birth was the hardest, or whatever, my job is the toughest, and so now I'm going to have a little bit of empathy for her or for him. That's really the way it works. We can be very reciprocative, but not without some coaching, not without somebody offering it to us first very often. And I'm ashamed to say that a lot of times I've said this before on the show, I've talked about my own judgmentality, and I try really hard to not be. I really do. I mean, it's a constant for me. I think to myself, my God, Renee, you have a lot. If I see somebody that's overweight, I think to myself, good God, child. And then I think to myself, oh, my God, did you really say that to yourself?
Hilarious. But it's hard, you know. I understand exactly what you're saying, you know. But when you came, the difference between you and I is that you and I will make instant judgments on people, because it's sort of human nature to do that, okay? But then you and I put ourselves in check, you know? You and I are more thoughtful than other people. And what I mean by that, I don't mean thoughtful as like, oh, thoughtful and kind. I mean thoughtful in that we think about what goes across our minds, you know? If we catch ourselves thinking something that's probably not as high-minded as we would like to, we alter it. We say, wow, you know, I shouldn't be thinking that. That's kind of cruddy of me. And we change it, and we change it in an instant, because when you and I think of something that's not really nice, because it really isn't our basic nature, it hits us. You know, we'll, like, recognize it instantly, and then we kind of, like, soften it a little bit, you know, where people who aren't as thoughtful or as self-aware, that's another way of putting it, most people are not self-aware enough to realize when they're being judgmental or when they're being unreasonable or when they're being unkind. They just plod through life being a little self-consumed, and so whatever happens to them makes them a victim, and yet whatever they do to other people is just because that's how they have to get things done, and you're just going to have to tolerate it. And there's a little bit of a double standard there of what they will accept on behavior of people treating them and what they see themselves putting back out to people, you know. And it's so it's something that I've noticed, but it's you know, but it's impossible not to entertain thoughts that maybe aren't so nice from time to time, but whether you act on them or allow them to become part of you is what sets people apart.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I just realized that if I'm being honest about my own private thoughts, that's what opens me to know that that's what's going on in other people's minds as well. And because that's a big part of what we talk about is the kind of judgmentality that we all have going on in our lives is harmful. It's really harmful to us, and it in some cases actually negates friendships and relationships, and that's like so dumb. I mean, really, and yet we do it all the time. You know, we pass judgment on somebody else's behavior. And again, because we're not thinking about the fact that maybe they're just having a bad, maybe they are, behaving very badly, but maybe they're just having a bad day. And mm-hmm. if you don't give yourself the opportunity to see another side of that story, you lose that relationship or that friendship, one that might have been wonderful for you. Have you ever thought about, like, when you were a teenager and you'd see somebody and wish that you had enough nerve to go up and say hello because they looked like they were having so much fun and, like, everybody really liked them and you wanted to be friends with them and you didn't? Or the opposite, you've seen somebody really behaving badly and thinking to yourself, God, I'm never going any place with this one again. I mean, you know, she's a fool, she's this, she's that, and never seeing them again. That's two friendships for totally different reasons or two relationships that you don't have. Why? Because you're judging somebody on whatever's going on in their day without any kind of insight to what it is. Mm-hmm. And that's, that really limits your friendships, your relationships, your circle of support. It really, really
right.
limits it.
Right.
So I think that one of the conversations that we should all have at some point in time, maybe we could get a couple people to join us to get different points of view, but I think it's a good idea to have a show that's about first impressions, just first impressions,
mm-hmm.
not about anything but first impressions. And I think it could be very, it could be funny. It could be interesting, and it could also open some doors for people to realize what kind of first impressions they leave people with. Don't you think that would be interesting to see? You know, maybe we could get some of our people that listen all the time, Elise and maybe even Mike Crystal and some people like that, and ask them to think of a time when their first impression either made them really, really like somebody and they found out they were a jerk later, or really, really not like somebody and then be disappointed that they never became friends with them.
Right,
first impressions,
right.
you know, they can be a major deal breaker. And
yep.
They're almost always wrong. That's what's
yep.
amusing about them. They're almost always wrong.
The flip
so
side
I
of
think that would be,
is,
yeah,
is,
I think that would be fun to do.
And the other thing is making first impressions. It amazes me how many people, you know, you say the job market today, you know, people are always complaining, oh, there's not jobs. And then you have people going on job interviews, and they're unkempt. They don't brush their teeth. I was talking to somebody recently who's, you know, has some job openings, and they said they were astonished at how some people would show up for the job interview. He said they looked like they just rolled out of bed. Their clothes were all wrinkled. You know, the one man didn't even bother brushing his teeth. He said he was, like, nauseated during the interview. And it's like, oh, my God, how do you go? You're trying to have these people think the best of you, you know. So when you go on a job interview, these people don't know you. They have this little 10-minute window to get to know you. You're going to want to make the absolute best impression you possibly can. And yet they don't even take the time, and they think they're going to get hired, you know. Mm. It's like, you know, because if I'm a prospective employer and I have somebody that can't even pull themselves together for a 10-minute interview, why would I bother giving them a job where I'm going to have to depend on them?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I use this all the time at NRS. some of the people that would show up for job interviews for some of the office positions. They're like, are you kidding me? That's how you come to a job interview? Why would I hire you if you don't have enough common sense to dress nicely, fix your hair, and brush your teeth, for God's sake? Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's another big, big story about, matter of fact, that's one of my, some of my finest judgmental moments is doing interviews, having somebody walk in my office smelling like beer and cigarettes and having them sit there.
See, there are cases, in fact, this would actually be a good show. This might actually have to be a two-parter because we can really spin out. That's when being judgmental is okay? When you are in a job interview and you know this person should be on their best because they're coming for a job interview, they've set an appointment, okay, and if they don't come at their best, how reliable can, unless they come in and say, I'm really sorry, I had an emergency last night, I only have like 2 hours sleep, I normally dress better than this, but I didn't want to miss the appointment. You know, if they come in and they show that they're self-aware and they're recognizing that at their best, you would almost respect that. But if they just come in and they're just acting like everything is okay and you're looking at them and they have bags under their eyes and their hair is in 20 directions and their shirt's not buttoned properly, how reliable can they possibly be if you put them in a job of responsibility, you know? So, So it is okay to be judgmental in that particular arena because you're setting a financial precedent for the company. So you don't want to hire somebody that's already showing they can't be reliable. They can't pull themselves together for a 10-minute interview. How are they going to pull themselves together to give you 40 hours a week in a stressful job? You see what I'm saying? So that's where being judgmental kind of, you have to be.
Well, and I think very sadly, well, maybe that's what makes it so hard, Shelley, that it is part of our makeup to have, you know, to be a good judge of character, which is the same thing, only different. You know,
right.
It's the same, only different. Being a good judge of character, that you don't involve yourself with somebody who obviously is an unsavory character, and for good reasons. But what if, you know? Let's just go to this real quick so that we can leave ourselves. I think we'll do that too. We will do a show about first impressions and about the the worth of being able to get the best and the worst out of a person on a first impression and know whether or not you're making a good decision. Very, very tricky. And I'm not even really sure that it's possible. But what if that person that just came in with the wrinkled shirt smelling like beer and cigarettes had to sit up all night because his dad had a heart attack and he's been at the emergency room all night. He knew he had the appointment. He drove straight from the emergency room. He'd been out with a couple friends watching a ball game or something, had a few beers, and being a smoker doesn't negate you from getting a job, even though I think that time's coming. So he had a really, really bad night, but he's a good person. He's really a good person, and he shows up for the job, and he doesn't get the job because he looks that way. Will it save him to tell you what he just did, or will you think that he's making excuses? How will you know that you're making the right decision about something like that if there are the ever-famous extenuating circumstances?
Well, that's why I'm saying somebody has to be self-aware enough. Somebody has to realize that they're going to that job interview in an inappropriate manner. And for them to say, look, I really apologize about my unkempt appearance. I was up at the hospital. I've only got 2 hours sleep, you know. Say, you know, if you give me a chance to come back again, say I can show you that I can really be here, but say that this was completely, you know, unavoidable, something I couldn't, you know, prepare for. And I had, you know, I had to go straight to the hospital after being out with my buddies. We were watching the game last night, you know. So if they come in and they're forthright and you can tell that they're being genuine, to me, that the fact that they dragged themselves to the interview after going through all that would actually give them extra points with me. All right, I would give them a follow-up interview to see if they really could pull themselves together. You know what I'm saying? But if they just came in and said nothing, I would just that resume is not even getting, that's getting a big red X on it. I wouldn't even give that person a second shot. So it does have to be somebody who is self-aware. Now, if this same person, you know, showed up for the interview and didn't feel compelled to say anything, shame on them then. You know, because there's nothing wrong with what they went through, but if they don't explain their bad appearance, then that's not being self-aware. You know, then maybe they are.
So maybe what we could do when we do this show is we could actually give pointers on how you would deal with a situation like that, because most people won't believe you on the phone. Oh, I've been up all night with my... So maybe showing up and saying, I apologize for the way I look. I smell like an old bar rag. I was at a football game with some friends, and my dad had a heart attack, and blah, blah, blah. You're going to have, first of all, a little bit of empathy and probably quite a bit of respect for the fact that he came in and let you know what was happening, and you make another appointment. So maybe that would be a part of the show that we could do, is talk about ways to gracefully and properly explain yourself when you know that you've put yourself in a bad place. We're out of time, though. I want to thank everybody, and we will be back. Please remember that the new time is 8 a.m. I'm going to see if this works better. I got a lot of complaints about 7. Are you crazy, Rainey? I'm not up at 7. So I hope that some of you get a better opportunity to hear the show and maybe call in and talk with Shelley and I. So God bless everybody. Have a great weekend. And we'll be back Monday morning at 8 o'clock. Thanks, Shel. I'll talk to you in a little while.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone.